I remember the night I walked away from the hospital, I had to get somebody to take him out of the room. I couldn't walk out of that room. I remember saying to the nurse, can you take him? And she said, why? I said, because if you take him, I'm not leaving him. And although it sounds very nuanced, mentally, yeah, I wasn't leaving him.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Okay, let's do this. Welcome along to the Still Parents podcast supported by Global's Make Some Noise. I'm Dan here as ever with Ryan and Matty from the Lily Mae Foundation. How are you, gents?
All right, thanks, mate.
You all right there, Ryan?
I am.
Let's introduce our guests. We've got very, very special guests. I'm delighted to have joining us in the studio today, Jeff Waters. Hello, Jeff. How are you, sir?
Yeah, good.
For eagle-eared, is that a phrase? Eagle-eared listeners of this podcast, you may already recognise Jeff's voice because Jeff is one quarter of the Brothers in Baby Loss podcast, which has been running now for around about a year and a half, give or take.
18 months.
And one of the guys, it was Mikey, who's on the podcast with you, was one of our first ever guests back when we were still on Zoom during the lockdown days, Mikey.
Yeah, his story was quite, I think it would stand out to people because he was the chap that was in the car, in the car park with his dog.
With his dog.
When he received the news.
Yeah.
A link to that episode is in the description for this. And we are absolutely delighted to that you've joined us. You've come up from Bedford, haven't you?
Yes.
So a little bit of a trek. Thank you. Now, before we get into the story with your twins, just tell us a bit more about you. In fact, we'll start with the podcast because I think, as we were saying before we started recording, with the topic that we're dealing with, the more podcasts that are out there to get exposure and to shine a light on everything that needs a light shining on, the better. So tell us a little bit about your podcast. I've heard about six or seven, but I have heard about six or seven episodes through in full. Tell us about how it came about and what you guys do on it.
Well, basically, it was actually kind of inspired a bit by you this podcast and another podcast that's out there. After losing Chester and the journey I kind of went through, I buried my head in the sand for a good period of time. There was an incident that happened that then made me decide I need to go and get some help. And I joined a local dad's support group through a charity called Chums. Basically I met Mikey, Ross and Dan. I formulated the idea that wouldn't it be good if we kind of had a localised podcast because you guys are up
in
the Midlands and the other podcast is quite prominent.
The other one that you're referring to is Dad's Still Standing. I am going to mention it. We've invited them on so many times, but they're very busy.
So we decided to set it up. We didn't really know where it was going to go. We decided we'd do a season of 10 episodes telling our stories and then like a follow-up episode. And we got some really good traction. So we continued going. We have started to have guests on now. We are talking to our local MP who is coming on at some point.
Fantastic.
There's been, through my work, I have stuff to do with government anyway. So,
are you a spy?
I wish. So we've had some conversations with potentially going into, I think you guys have been on the parliamentary.
Yeah, as a charity we are.
We had Keith Batty, the MP, on this.
So we've had conversations about that. So it's still kind of in its infancy and it's growing, but as I was saying to you, I mean, it's still very sort of an amateurish production and it's very organic. We record it in my conservatory, although we might need to find somewhere new soon because I'm moving.
Oh, okay. Well, you're definitely going to need to find somewhere new.
Well, ironically, the house we're buying has got a converted garage.
There you go.
And it's got this kind of stuff around it.
Sorted.
I might be able to turn that into a part studio, although my wife runs a...
Ryan's got loads of this soundproofing boards left over. You go to his house, he's even got it in his bathroom. I'm like, you can go to Ryan's house, take a piss really loudly and no one can hear it.
But my wife runs a business from home, so she might have already taken a dibs on the
garage.
So I don't know that one yet. But yeah, that's where the podcast came from. We kind of promote it locally, and it's gone a bit wider than we thought it was going to. We've had interactions from USA, Mexico.
But I think that's the good thing though about a podcast is that you set out to keep it local, to keep it almost in like a controllable. Area, if that's your core, isn't it?
It organically expands.
But I think that's where we were quite shocked on how quick the story of baby loss and how obviously how many people worldwide it affects. So even though you think you're local, you're not. You're worldwide. No. because you're offering that support, because you never know who's listening on the other end of a on the other end of a phone or a radio. Or
I think there's still a very distinct lack for focus on fathers.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of stuff there for mothers, which is great. That's all there. But there's still this very distinct lack. And I think there's still a lot of boundaries, and there's still a lot of stigma around about how men talk about what they talk about and what the effect is, if that makes sense. So it does, yeah, it's taken quite... It took us a bit by surprise how much we had. So.
Well, there's a couple of bits I want to pick you up on with that. Because one, when you mentioned about some of the countries, because when you said Mexico and America, because that's two countries where we get a lot of traction too. So it's interesting to see and Australia, I imagine it's the same places. So we definitely need to link you up with Kelly, Jean-Philippe, one of our ambassadors. Yeah. He's the guy who does these, he's like the old school movie voiceover you might hear on the start of our episodes. And he's based out of Philadelphia in the USA. Lovely guy.
We were really, really not concerned, but we were back. We've had a lot of listens from Russia as well. Which we found very strange considering the current circumstances out there. It was really...
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, you get these little hotspots. We had one recently. Where was it? Buffalo. So we Googled it, and there'd been some story over there. So I'm guessing people were delving in, and that's kind of tailed off a bit now. But then there's another place.
Venezuela.
No. Vermont, somewhere beginning with V in
Vermont,
America.
Vermont.
Might be.
Yeah, we've had a lot from there.
Okay, so there you go.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, is it? So they, again, which kind of backs up why it's important for it's different.
Just
to
shows,
These things are different to like radio.
Yeah,
but the podcast, the opportunity for synergy is something which should not be ignored. And you absolutely should work together. The other thing I wanted to mention, Jeff, is because, again, you nailed it on the head, with the guys. And being able to, as I keep saying, to shine the light on the guys and look at things and see, maybe peel back the layers into how guys process things. And I'm going to use that as a way to give you a nudge on a little story that you mentioned earlier. See if you don't mind expanding on that a little bit. So can I call it the taxi incident?
You can, yes, yeah.
And because this is when everything kind of came out, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I mean, what happened was after, and we'll go a bit more into that in a bit, but after everything that happened with the twins, I buried my head. I threw myself into work. I threw myself into a lot of things. I have an older son who was 3.5 at the time when it happened, so I was obviously caring for him. We're a very small family. We don't have a lot of support around us. Mm. We don't have a lot of help. So, I really threw myself in, and I kind of buried my head. Put my head in the sand, stuck my thumb up my ass, whatever word you want to use, if that makes sense. It was very much...
That's the title of this episode, stuck my phone up my ass.
I just didn't really pay attention to, like, life. And I pushed it all down. And I went out one night, I can't remember September 20... No, it must have been September 23. I know I said 22 earlier.
Yeah.
I think it must have been September 23 because the timing sort of worked.
The loss was December 21.
Yeah, so it would have been about September 23. I went out went out in Bedford with some friends for just dinner, had a few beers, got a taxi home. I live in a little village, kind of about 15 minutes outside of Bedford. Okay. Normal taxi journey is about 10 quid. Pulled up, not sort of like at the end of my road. And he kind of, the taxi driver said, "That's £25. I said, "No, this is normally a tenner. I'm not paying you 25 quid. This is..." And we started arguing, and I threw him £10 and I got out of the taxi. He got out of the taxi and followed me down an alleyway. And we started arguing. And I was thankful that there was a group of, I've never actually got to thank him or talk to him since because I've never seen him around the village since, but there was a group of youths, sort of like 14, 15, walking through the alley.
14, 15 youths or age?
Age.
Right, okay.
Age. I think it was about 5 or 6.
Right, okay.
You say you haven't seen them again? Oh, it's probably, they were on the rob, probably.
they're on the way to rob your house, probably.
Yeah. Me and this taxi driver were like proper squaring.
Wow.
And I could feel the anger coming up, and I could feel everything of the last, you know, what would have been that, 18, 20 months coming to the surface. And I actually fear that if those kids hadn't stepped in and stopped it, and ironically, they rang the taxi company and said, "How much had a taxi journey been from Bedford to here?" And they said, it's about 10, 12 quid.
No way.
So he was proper
so he
having
was
you
trying
on.
Yeah.
What's wrong with people? It's not like you can't tell you're not familiar with the area. Take me to my house.
So they kind of pulled him away, and I walked home and I was a bit shaken up by it, but it was the anger that came out. And I said to my wife, "I need to do something." I said to Elaine, "I need to do something." And she was like, "What do you mean?" I was like, "Well, firstly, I'm going to give up drinking because I probably had about 8. I used to drink cider, so I probably had about 8 bottles of cider."
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to give up drinking, and also I'm going to find some help.
Yeah.
So I haven't drunk since December 23. That's why I think it was 23, not 22.
Yeah, okay.
My last drink was New Year's Eve 2023.
Yeah. Congratulations, that's brilliant. Yeah,
I don't touch alcohol.
Not a drop since then. How did you find that?
It was hard to start with. The social side of it was the hardest part, going out drinking with my friends and then not being able to have a drink. I say I don't drink. I still put a bit of red wine in a lasagna or a spaghetti bolognese, but other than that, there's no alcohol.
Well, that's fine, isn't it?
The one thing I would say, though, is nowadays you can go out and socialise and drink I drink Guinness Zero quite a lot.
Funny you should say that, because I was out with, my older son plays rugby, and I was out with the rugby dads at Christmas, and I was drinking water, and they were ribbing me something chronic, and I was So I went to the bar and I was like, look, just give me a Guinness Zero. I'll try it. And I had to get, and it's really nice.
Oh, it's so banging.
So I now drink Guinness Zero.
No, the Zeros, they taste, compared to like,
they've got better.
Remember like the first one ever?
Calibre.
Calibre,
yeah.
Honestly.
It's horrendous.
Oh, God, yeah.
So the other part was I went to get some help and I joined a dad's group, a charity called Chums, which is like a bereavement charity around Bedfordshire, Hertfordshire.
Have you heard of that?
I've just got it up actually to have a look.
So I went to dad's group there and the dad's groups are helpful and I still periodically go every now and again, but it wasn't really for me this kind of support.
Yeah.
I got support out of it, but I needed something more.
Yeah.
So I had the idea of setting up a podcast. So I started researching it and then I came across your podcast and I came across the other podcast. I listened for all them and I kind of, there was three guys there, Mikey, Ross and Dan, and I approached them and I said, look, let's give it a crack, see if we can set it up. So we did. We recorded the first episode in the back room of a coffee shop in a local village.
Fantastic.
And if you listen back to that episode, you will hear the owner of the coffee shop making coffee in the background. You can hear that. You can literally hear him. So then we decided that we'd record it. We started recording it in my conservatory and that's where we've been since.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
In a nutshell, that taxi incident was the catalyst for where you are right now.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
But Dan, I was saying to Jeff before we went on, and there, like it is a generalization, but there's a lot of people that I've come across on this journey where they've had almost like one moment. I had a moment my help, and there was other people that I've spoken to have had that. It's like it almost like comes to a point, like a boiling point type thing. And it's like actually, I need to admit I'm struggling.
Yeah. What was yours?
I won't go into detail. It was bad. Me and Crystal nearly lost our marriage over it.
Yeah.
Literally. And it was that moment that really hit us. And I was like, right, I need to get my help now. And it did. It made a huge difference. Worst thing that happened to us as far as the marriage is concerned, but then the best thing that happened because it got my help and then I was able to kind of look at the fact I hadn't really dealt with stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, just building on that. So mine and Elaine's marriage had fallen apart completely.
Okay.
I at one point, I'm fairly sure we both believed that we were going to separate.
Yeah.
And by going and getting the help, some other things have happened that I won't mention on here, but by going and getting that help, I was then able to look at what had been happening and why it was happening. And the kind of like with most couples that go through baby loss, I talk about Chester all the time.
Yep.
I tell people about him. Elaine doesn't. Elaine is a closed book.
Okay. Yeah.
And one of the sort of things they said to me in the counseling was that you're both reading the same book, but you're in different chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And we both kind of looked at that and went, that's true. Where Elaine processes things very much internally to herself, whereas I'm very much, I'll go out and talk. You know, we were talking earlier, I've got the tattoos. Mm. We had a tattoo the same of the kids' initials. We've both got that. I've got jewellery with his name on it. I've had loads of jewellery made for her with his name on it.
So you got a tattoo behind your left ear as well?
Yeah, it's the men's mental health.
Yeah. Tattoo. Yeah, that, okay, yeah.
We were very different. We, you know.
And grieved differently.
Yeah, but I think it was the counselling that brought us back together. Me going and getting some help, because then I was able to see that I didn't need to take everything.
Yeah.
Because what I was doing was literally taking everything on my shoulders. I was taking everything for her. I was taking everything for my mum, for her mum. For JJ, for Matilda, I was literally straddling everything, and I've got quite a...
But that's what men do.
So it was very much. So that was that. So the podcast kind of for me is a little bit of an element of it's to put out there for to help other men, but it's also on the basis that it's my time with Chester. You know,
so it's cathartic for you in its very existence.
Yeah, I mean, I've covered this on some of the episodes that we've done, but it's like I can take JJ to football. I can take Matilda to ballet. I can do all these things with them as they grow older. I can't do that with Chester.
I love that.
I can't do any of it with him. Yeah. So those couple of hours that that's I spend great. With the other guys recording and the time I spend uploading it is my time with him. Mm. And it's also, it kind of puts down, for me, it also puts down something in physical form for my two other children. So for JJ and Matilda, when they're older and they want to understand why their dad was the way they was or why their mum was the way they was.
How old is JJ now?
So he's now 8. He was just turned 8. So when he's sort of like 14, 15, he'll be able to listen because as we'll talk about this, when we go through the story, JJ was 3.5 when the twins were born. And he was fully involved because they were IVF twins. So he was fully aware that it was going to be two babies coming home.
Okay.
And we've got a little, you can't see it because I'm not here, but we've got a knitted spaceman on the table here.
Yes.
Our podcast has four, like, mascots, for want of a better word. There's a spaceman, a robin, a butterfly, and a dinosaur.
So one for each host.
Yeah, for one for each host. So mine is a spaceman. And the spaceman literally kind of comes off from... It's almost linked to JJ. So when the twins were born, they were born on the 17th of December, 2021. They were born at 29 plus weeks. And Chester lived till the 31st of December. So it was 14 days. He was literally 25 minutes short of 14 days old when he died. Because it was Christmas, obviously, you know, at Christmas, everyone plays Christmas songs.
I think I know where this is going.
Every time I got in my car, every time, because we were moving around hospitals a lot, every time I got in the car, JJ at the time liked Christmas songs, so we had Magic Christmas on. And pretty much you can guarantee it, every time I got in the car, Spaceman Came Traveling played. And that was his song. So every time, that then became Chester's song. And we've got like little, I don't know if you know him, but those iBeat things you can get put on the fridge that play songs.
Yeah.
So we've got a Spaceman Came Traveling, one of them. And it was like, that became Chester's song. What we knew was Chester's song. And that's where the spaceman comes from me.
That's great.
But the part where that links in with JJ is when, after we came home and we used to go driving around, we had to explain to JJ where Chester was, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't know if any of you guys know, but do any of you know Moon Baby, the old TV program?
Yes.
Yeah,
I do.
So JJ used to be into Moon Baby, which was about this like little baby spaceman. That
I'm thinking of Moomins.
No, Etta used to
watch. I was thinking of Moomins.
Etta watched that when she was little.
It was about this little baby spaceman that lived in the moon, and he used to come down to Earth and see people, and then at night he used to come back up into the moon. So when, after Chester had gone, and we had to explain to JJ that we were only kind of one baby was coming home and Chester had died, and he was like, well, what's happened to him? Where is he? And we told him that Moon Baby had come down from the moon and picked him up and took him up in the moon.
Okay.
So we used to then literally drive around, and the car I had at the time had a panoramic roof, so it had a full sun roof. So at night he would ask me to open the roof and he'd be looking for the moon, and he'd find the moon and he'd say, Chester.
That's beautiful.
You know,
that's got me, that is.
Three and a half years old, that's quite... So then we...
Does he still do that now?
Yeah. Now, when we go on holiday and stuff, we don't really travel abroad. Most of our holidays are always in the UK. So at night, if we're driving around, you'll say, oh, can you open the roof and point out?
That's beautiful.
And he finds the kind of moon. And although we say Chester was in the moon, he then knows that the spaceman, it's a spaceman in the moon. So he's looking for a spaceman. Yep. So that's where spaceman... So yeah, it was Christopher.
And that'll be present throughout his whole life, won't it?
He knows 100%, like at Christmas when... Spaceman comes traveling and comes on the radio. This is Chester's song. I've got a playlist on my phone through Spotify, which that song's on there. If it plays, he'll always say, oh, that's Chester's song. That's kind of the link into the podcast.
Hi, I'm Ross.
I'm Dan.
I'm Mikey.
Hi, I'm Jeff.
And welcome to another episode from the Brothers in Baby Lost podcast.
You're in this sort of bubble, but everyone else is kind of carrying on as normal, like the world's just kind of turning and you've just stopped somehow.
The hopes and dreams that we had of having our family were shattered.
You walk through the depths of hell, you've been through the worst thing any father could go through, and we're all still standing.
And there's also been moments where I've actually been learning a lot about myself and my journey.
You know, we sort of all started off as strangers, and now we're all, literally brothers in baby loss.
Links for the Brothers and Baby Lost podcast in the description for this. So please go and subscribe to it. Get in touch. Go and follow their socials as well, which will again will be in the description for this. Before I forget, just one final reference to the taxi incident, because you said you were squaring up. You're ready to go. Do you like boxing?
I boxed when I was a lot younger.
Brilliant.
But probably not now.
Okay. So our next charity boxing event, I imagine, will be around about November time. We've just finished our fourth. It's 3 2-minute rounds. We do it in Coventry. I reckon we should get you down.
Yeah.
I'll give it some thought.
Yeah. There we go. So let's get into your story then. So how long have you and Elaine been together? Just for a bit of background.
It's a bit of a nuanced story. So me and Elaine actually were together when we were... So I'm a year older than Elaine. So I was 17, she was 16. We were together for about 6 months.
Yeah.
And then we split up and went our own separate ways. And then we got back into contact.
Who dumped who?
I think originally she dumped me, actually. Yeah. We got back into contact around about 2009. We kind of spoke. We both had different partners at the time. She split up with her partner. I'd split up with my partner. And then I think around 2012 we got together properly.
Oh wow, okay.
We jokingly say, because I don't know if you made the comment, but we were courting for about 6 months, but we weren't courting. We were just kind of like going
around, steady.
Yeah, we were going around each other's houses for pizza on like a Tuesday night, you know what I mean? It wasn't anything major. And then
alphabeti spaghetti and all that.
It's really ironic. It was the first time that Andy Murray won Wimbledon on that Sunday evening.
Oh yeah.
I'd been away on a stag do in Liverpool, and I'd come back from the stag do, and we'd kind of had dinner. And we went to bed, and I think we woke up about 2:30 in the morning, and neither of us could sleep. And I said, "So are we together now?" And she was like, "Well, we might as well be."
I love that. You old romantic, you.
It's pretty much since August. I think that was July 2012.
Yeah.
I think around that time.
Yeah,
we've been together since then. We moved in together in 2013, got married in 2018. JJ was 6 months old when we got married.
Yeah,
but both so going into. Sorry, both JJ and the pregnancy with the twins were IVF.
Both, right, okay.
Both IVF.
How did you find, was there much differences between, obviously not, you know, getting into the loss, but the conception phase of the IVF with either pregnancy?
No, so it was really bizarre. There is actually nothing wrong with either me or Elaine, as in internally.
Okay.
As we were talking about earlier, I've got Crohn's disease and I had to have an operation many, many years ago, which affects the ability down there to do what you need to do, if that makes
sense. Okay, yeah.
So we were, our first course of IVF in 2017 was on the NHS. And I don't know why, I lost my father very young in 2009. He was 56 when he passed away. And I just knew it was going to work. I don't know why, I just knew. We went to the clinic and I just said, this is working. We're having a little boy. I don't need to, I know it's going to happen. I think it was because when my dad passed away on his deathbed, I made him a promise that if I ever had a son, I'd name my son after him. So although his name is, we know him as JJ, he's actually Jeffrey Jr. Because my dad was Jeffrey as well. So there's three. So I don't know why I was so at ease with the IVF, the first round of IVF. I knew it was going to work. I knew 100%.
Yeah.
So that worked. JJ was born 5th of April 2018. He was meant to be born on the 4th of May. And it always confuses me because his birthday is 5-4 and it should have been 4-5.
This is not 6-7.
So you've gone for the American one.
Yeah. So he was 5 weeks early, or 4 weeks a bit early, because Elaine had preeclampsia and all that kind of
right,
stuff.
Right, okay.
And then we tried again in 2019. We had some eggs frozen. We tried again and it didn't. Again, I knew it wasn't going to work. I don't know why. 2019, we decided we would start, we would try again. Obviously, 2019 went through and we went into 2020. COVID happened and everything kind of shut down.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we'd started the process before everything shut down.
Oh, right. Wow. How did that play out then?
Quite awkward, to be honest, because it was like Elaine went for tests. No, can't do the test now. So this went through for most of 2020 into 2021.
Gosh.
And then at the beginning of 2021, when lockdown was lifted and restrictions, but we were like, right, we can now go back and restart the treatment. Mm. So we restarted the treatment. I think it was around the March, April time. And if anyone's listened to the other podcast, they'll know that I produced the samples on my 40th birthday. Great way to spend your 40th birthday. sat in a room watching some dodgy TV. That was exactly my...
To many people, that would be the dream way to spend their 40th birthday.
So yeah.
What are you doing today? Nothing.
So we produced it, everything was done. We went back and they basically said to us, you've got really viable legs. You got two really viable legs. And because of Elaine's age and my age, they said, look, we recommend putting both back in.
Okay.
So they put both in. And then we went back. I can't remember. I can't remember the time lapse between when they do it and when you go back, yeah. If that makes sense. But we went back and they said, yeah, it's worked. We know one's taken. We're not sure what's happened with the other one. You need to come back in a week's time for another scan. In between that, so I think that was on a Tuesday, and then on the Friday, Elaine went in for her COVID vaccine, which she didn't really want to have, but the hospital was saying, because of pregnancy, she needed to have it.
Oh, right. So was it mandatory?
It wasn't mandatory, no.
But it was recommended.
Recommended. Right. So okay. She had a COVID vaccine initially within, I think it was within 24 hours, she collapsed at home.
Oh, my God.
And was taken into Bedford Hospital. Obviously, I wasn't allowed to go in with her at the time because there were still COVID restrictions. Bedford Hospital discharged on Saturday afternoon.
And that was because of the vaccine?
We don't know.
Right.
We've never explored that. And it's probably, with everything that happened afterwards, it's a Pandora's box that I don't think Mira Lane
wants to open,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
She was told to come back on the Monday morning, and she was told you must bring someone back with you Monday morning. So this was kind of like the first part of the real journey. So we went back up to the hospital on Monday morning. As we walked into Bedford Hospital, I was stopped at reception and was told, you're not allowed to go in because COVID restrictions. Mm. And I said, well, when we were here at the weekend, we were told that she has to come with somebody because she's very early stage of pregnancy. We don't know if it's twins. We don't know what's happened. Mm. She's collapsed. Da, da, da. To be honest with you, I don't know why they didn't just keep her in as an inpatient. But they
did. Did you have to travel far? Was it?
Well, Bedford Hospital from us is about 20 minutes.
Oh, okay, so not too bad then.
No. So I ended up having an argument with security where security said, you can't come in. Then no one's allowed in the hospital. The police got called.
Then 14 lads turned up in an alleyway.
Taxi driver was waiting outside.
Police.
Bit of a theme here.
Police turned up and threatened to arrest me for not doing. And it was by pure chance that the nurse that Elaine had seen on the Saturday in the maternity unit walked through reception, and her exact words to me to her, what the fuck are you doing down here? I said, what do you mean? She said, you need to be upstairs with Elaine. And then suddenly the security guard and the police went, oh, he is telling the truth.
Oh my God, I hate that. Guilty till proven innocent.
Honestly, it's mad.
And they let me into the hospital, and we went in for a scan. Elaine was fine. Everything was fine. But we had it then confirmed that it was twins. Both eggs had taken, non-identical twins. But obviously,
how did that make you feel at the time? Did you want twins?
Well, yeah. I sort of phoned my boss and said, I think I might need a raise.
Hey, it's a great way to try and get one, though, isn't it?
So we were then told, okay, well, it's going to be very closely monitored because previously you were high risk with the previous.
Yeah.
You've got non-identical twins without being crude, but Elaine's age. So we went home. Everything was fine. I say everything was fine, but we went home. Everything was good. Pregnancy went on. Elaine was okay. She was still working. She worked through until kind of like nothing then really happened until like the November time. And around the beginning of November, we went in for a scan and we were told one of the babies wasn't growing as...
How many weeks would this have been? Give or take around that.
About 25, okay. 26 weeks.
Right.
One of the babies wasn't growing as it was. So they said, right, you need to come onto weekly scans now, or 10 daily scans, I think it was.
Yeah.
So we went for a scan at the beginning of December. So it was the first week of December. We went in and they couldn't properly track the heartbeat of one of the babies. So Elaine ended up being admitted and she was on like a double Doppler. I don't know if you've seen it, the thing they wear. She was on that.
Double Doppler.
Which is really confusing because they didn't actually quite know which Doppler
was
monitoring.
Which was doing what. Yeah.
So
yeah.
She spent the weekend in hospital and they kind of said, okay, no, we're happy now. Everything's where it should be. Go home, come back next week for another scan. So it was on the 13th of December. We went back in for a scan. And we went in and saw the sonographer, and it's that comment you kind of, I suppose it was a bit confusing for me because I could see the two babies on the screen and I could see the two heartbeats. And then he kind of just said, oh, I need to go and get my colleague. Yeah. And you're sort of sitting there going, well, but I can see two babies and I can see two heartbeats. I can't, what?
Something's happened, yeah.
Yeah, so.
It's alarm bells going off.
Yeah, he went off and they came back in and they said, oh, I can't remember her name, but basically the head person of the department needs to talk to you. We're going to take you to a side room. So as we walked out of this room, and I can't remember, and I wish I could remember, I don't know if it was the sonographer that grabbed me or if it was the nurse that grabbed me. I can't remember which one it was, but one of them grabbed me and said, can I just have a quick word with you about parking? I was like, what the fuck do you want to talk to me about parking for? Like, what the fuck are you doing? So I went, and I think it was a sonographer. The reason I say that is because in my head it's a male voice and it was a male sonographer.
Okay.
And I remember him just saying to me, just to make you aware that this is a very serious situation. You need to prepare yourself. There's a high risk that all three of those could die. And at that point, I was just, wow. Bang, size.
Oh, my.
Basically, what transpired that I didn't know, and this all makes sense afterwards, was that Elaine's blood pressure was something ridiculous, like 277 over 270. It was through the roof.
Jesus.
Absolutely off the scale. Basically, what was happening was that Chester was pumping, he couldn't pump the blood. So the blood that was being pumped to him through the placenta and from Elaine, he couldn't process it. It was getting pushed back.
Oh, okay.
So it was pushing back his blood pressure. So her blood pressure was through the roof. So we were taken into this side room. I now know it's called something backflow. There is actual condition.
Is it? Okay.
So we were taken into this side room and we were sat down and we were told, those babies need to come out now. And we're like, okay.
This was 29 weeks. No.
Yeah, 29. I think it was 29 weeks and 2 days. Okay. Elaine knows those dates better.
Yeah, yeah.
We were told those babies need to come out now. If they're not out within 72 hours, there's a serious risk that all three of them's, survive.
They're supposed to process that in the moment as well.
Well, ironically, and I think I've heard this story somewhere else. I said to Elaine, okay, right. After they'd kind of said to us, I said, look, I need something to drink. I need some sugar. I need something to... So I went downstairs and got me and Elaine a bottle of Coke. I used to drink Dr. Pepper. I don't drink it now. But I stupidly bought Dr. Pepper Zero, not realising it was Dr. Pepper Zero.
Oh, that
didn't work.
I need some sugar. Buy a sugarless drink.
Yeah, to try and give myself a sugar hit.
Yeah.
But they were like, right, basically what's going to happen is you're going to get admitted and the babies will... We will get those babies out as soon as possible. Followed by, but we can't do it here. And we were like, what do you mean you can't do it here? Well, supposedly Bedford is not a sufficient enough grade hospital to be able to, for babies under 33 weeks to be delivered.
Yeah, because they need a grade 3.
That's exactly.
Neonatal unit.
Yeah, grade 3 neonatal, yes. So Bedford isn't
so it's the facilities, not the staff?
Yeah, it's the facility.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
So basically they said, well, what happens? What do we do? Because this is... So they said, effectively, you are currently top of the list in England, Scotland and Wales for a bed. We need two beds and a mum bed. So it's not just we need one bed. We need
three.
And it's literally anywhere where it comes available.
Yeah, you will be top of that route. Problem was, we were then told that no hospital will commit any beds until the babies are born. But the babies can't be born until the beds are committed. Exactly. So it was a catch. It was like dog chase its own tail.
What advice were you getting? Then the support from the...
We weren't. We were getting nothing.
Oh, and he's to help you figure out the best plan of action or what to do. No, it was all on you.
No, we were in their hands because they were arranging the thing.
Yeah.
And you've got to remember at the time, we still had a 3.5-year-old son at home. So I was having to go home, pick him up from there. She took him out. Long story short, that was the Tuesday. Then the Wednesday, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday morning, I can't remember off the top of my head. They came around and said, right, we've got two beds. We found your bed. No problem. Problem is they're in Aberdeen.
Wow.
That's like quite high up Scotland as well.
Yeah. So they basically said, right, I don't even know what it's called. Is it HeliMed?
Helicopter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they said Elaine will be prepped, helicoptered up.
Oh, wow.
My brother used to work in Aberdeen, so knows Aberdeen quite well. So I rang him up. Right, where's good to stay? What can I do up there? Do you know anyone up there?
Okay.
You got any friends that I could... Whatever. So they were looking at that, and then they came around a couple of hours later and said, no, Aberdeen's off the table, can't do it. Because they've taken it to HeliMed, and HeliMed has said with Elaine's blood pressure...
It's too...
Oh, yeah,
if they elevate her...
Of course.
So Aberdeen came off the table. So we went through the Wednesday afternoon, I think it was, and as I say, these days kind of...
Yeah,
merge.
Walking to merge. They came back and they said, we've got a bed in Manchester. So we'll prep Elaine. She'll go up by blue light, ambulance to Manchester, and it will all be dealt with up there. Okay, so they started prepping her. It was about an hour and a half, 2 hours later, they came back and said, oh, no, Manchester can't happen. I can't quite remember what had happened, but there'd been a car crash or there'd been something in Manchester with a pregnant lady.
So
she'd been rushed in, had to do an emergency birth. That took one of the beds away. So, okay, so then we went into the Thursday and they said to us, okay, we've now got a bed in Birmingham and a bed in Leicester. So you're going to be transferred to Birmingham. You're going to be, because supposedly Birmingham is like one of the top.
Birmingham Children's.
He's got the fetal medicine. Got the Children's Hospital next door as well. Yes. Birmingham Women's Hospital, was it?
So like you're going to be transferred to Birmingham and then you'll give birth and the strongest, the most vulnerable, weakest baby will stay with you in Birmingham. And then I would have needed to travel to Leicester and the other baby would have gone to Leicester. So again, I don't know what happened, but the Leicester bed fell away. So we were like, crap. So we went into the Friday.
Sorry to interrupt here.
It's like torture.
I'm assuming at this point they're managing her blood pressure.
Yes.
With however it is they do it. I think they do it with magnesium, if I remember right.
Couldn't do.
But was it called twin backflow?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, which is, I'm just doing this more for the listener. It's a standard medical term. And it lightly refers to a few serious complications, usually with identical twins, where they share the same placenta. Okay. But obviously, this would have been different because they weren't...
They were non-identical.
So this would have been different because they're non-identical. And it's basically shunts, which can severely elevate a mother's blood pressure. So it sounds very much that is.
So we then went on to the Friday morning. And obviously, we're now coming to 72 hours after we'd been told we need to get those babies out within 72 hours, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And they said, we don't have a plan. We don't know what to do. We can't deliver.
We can't just do it.
So I then kind of, I suppose, lost my shit. It's probably the best way to put it in the hospital. Because I'm now saying, 3 days ago, you told me that these three are going to die. You know, I'm now starting to prepare myself for the worst of thing. They came around on the Friday afternoon and a big meeting was called between Bedford, Luton and Adam Brooks about what they were going to do. And it was decided that they would open up two extra beds at Luton that had been closed due to COVID. The babies would be delivered at Bedford under direction from Luton. And then immediately once they were born, they would be transferred to Luton. Problem with that was... bureaucracy within the NHS was that if they opened these two beds up in Luton, they then had two live beds, and if somebody walked into Luton, they would use them. So the risk was then taken. They basically said, we are going to be delivering those babies in Bedford this afternoon. They then said to us, we need to deliver them by 5:30 because the anaesthetist goes off at 5:30 and we don't have a weekend anaesthetist. And there's no one after 5:30 to be here to do it. So effectively, they took Elaine into... theatre at 4:00. Chester came out at 4:39. I think he was 1.4. And then Matilda came out 2 minutes later at 1.39. So they were absolutely tiny little babies.
Which, again, it does say about this the twin backflow is that it does. Because the placenta is not functioning as it should do, you would have selective fetal growth restriction.
Yes. So then, they were then taken up to Bedford's NICU and incubated. At that point, they were like, were they going to be transferred to Luton later tonight? I didn't know this, and I don't know if you guys have it up this part of the world, but in sort of the east of England, there's a thing called PANDAR, and they're basically NICU on wheels. Their NICU ambulances is a charity. It's not funded by the NHS.
I have heard of it, yeah.
PANDA.
PANDA, yeah. PANDR.
Okay.
And it's these two ambulances they have for the whole of the east of England. So it serves like pretty much the whole of the east.
Wow.
And we had them both that night. And they turn up and they are literally a NICU. It's an ambulance.
With a NICU inside.
Yeah, effectively, yeah. So they were both transferred at sort of, I think it was between 12 and 1 o'clock in the morning. I went home. I can't remember if JJ was with my mum or Elaine's mum or comment, but so I went home to see him. And then I went up to Luton and Dunstable Hospital and was told I couldn't go in because of COVID. And I was like, seriously. seriously, you need to let me in.
You can make a film out of this. It's got all these obstacles. It's like that.
COVID, man, just let the fucking guy in.
Because it's just relentless obstacle after obstacle. Getting given, then taken away from you.
I get the protocol. You know what? Give him a mask. Right, we were allowed masks. Give him a mask.
They let me in at like 4 o'clock. Yeah. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning in the end. I got in to see both twins. And they were both incubated. And they looked, and I have to say, even then, nothing had been picked up at this point. There was anything wrong.
So at this moment in time,
they've been born, but they were just tiny, but that was all you...
Yeah. But Matilda looked healthy, if that makes sense. Chester didn't. Right. Matilda looked... pink. She looked.
Yeah. Okay.
There was some color there.
Yeah. Chester looked. It's like really sort of like grey, pinky. I felt at the time something didn't feel right, and I didn't say anything. You know.
How was Elaine through all of this? Because the pressure and
completely. And she won't mind me saying this. She was completely checked out.
Yeah. Because I'm not surprised.
She'd gone through all that trauma, and then she wasn't able to hold the babies after they were born. God. I was able to go up to Nika in Bedford and to kind of put my hand in and touch them. They wheeled her up, I think, at about 11 o'clock in a wheelchair so she could see them, but she wasn't allowed to touch them because she still had open wounds and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
On the Saturday, she got discharged from Bedford. We took her over to Luton. And then the next few days weren't really, not much really happened. They were being tested. They were having they were both still on CPAC. They were having food. They were looking after them,
yeah.
And then on the Wednesday, which was the 22nd, I had to work. It was the only day that over that period that I had to do something. I had a really important project that needed to be written off on that day. So I was working from home. She phoned me and said, you need to come up to the hospital now. And I was like, okay, well, why? I can't tell you over the phone. You need to get here now. And I was thinking, oh, fuck, what's happened? Something. So I drove. Yeah. We live, probably 40 minutes from Bedford. Where we live to Luton Hospital is about 40 minutes. So I booted out there, got up there as quick as I could, walked in, and Great Ormond Street ran a clinic at Luton Dunstable Hospital on the last Wednesday of the month. But because it was Christmas, they were running it a week early. And the consultants from Luton, from Great Ormond Street, had walked around and taken one look at Matilda and said, yeah, she's healthy and fine, but he's not. And they'd sort of said, have you done an echo scan?
ECG.
Yeah, have you done that on... No, we haven't done that. Why not? Okay, you need to do one. So they did one. This was obviously before I got to the hospital. This was why Elaine wanted me to come up there. And basically, the scan showed that Chester's heart only had two chambers. So instead of having four chambers, it had two. He only had the oxygen chambers.
So the left side?
Yes. But that was then why the blood was being pushed back.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
Because his heart,
because it wasn't going into the lungs to pick up the oxygen to come back in. Yes.
Yeah. So we basically were taken to a side room and we were basically told his chances of survival are zero. They said there is an operation he can have, but he would need to be at least 5 pounds.
What was it?
1.4. Absolutely tiny. And they said, we can give him medication, but the medication we give him to get him to that weight will kill him before he gets to that weight. It will bring on cardiac arrest because of what it does. So we were kind of given the option either withdrawal treatment or give him medication, and then that medication will kill him. And I sort of said, well, is that 100% the medication will kill him? And they said, yes, because it's a stimuli medication. So it'll stimulate the heart, and his heart can't beat, and basically it will cause his heart to just explode. So we were basically told, that's the decision you've got. We were then, obviously I looked at Elaine. Elaine's in no state at that point to make a decision, and I can't quite remember what she said, what the words were, but I think she sort of said, I can't do it. You need to do it. I can't make the decision. So
do you know what I don't understand in this day and age with the way that medical technology and stuff like that is how they can't, you know, like if somebody has open heart surgery, for instance, or they have, I don't know, like lung surgery, and they're able to bypass the heart or the lungs through machinery to be able to keep that patient alive. Don't understand how in this day and age they're not able to do something like that and give him a quality of life to be able to gain the weight ready to be able to do that type of operation.
Like a dialysis machine for the
yeah.
I asked that question and they were like, no, because of what the medication would do, there wouldn't, it wouldn't, his heart wouldn't be in a condition to then be
operating. More to do with the stimulation of it.
I mean, we have looked into the condition he had. So basically, they then we were given that decision, and my exact thing to the doctor at Grey Ormond Street was, how long are we, you know? So no, it wasn't. First of all, I said, what will cause him the less pain? What is going to be the kindest way for him to go? And they basically said natural withdrawal treatment. And naturally let him, but basically, if we give him medication, he will effectively die from heart attack. It will be cardiac arrest because of the pressure put on his heart. If we withdraw all treatment, he will asphyxiate. He will just go to sleep and not wake back up one day. That's basically it. So I just said, okay.
And well, they couldn't give you a time scale on that, could they?
They kind of did. So I basically said, look, just withdraw all treatment and we'll see where we are. And they effectively, we sort of said, how long are we looking at? And they said, well, it could be 24 hours, it could be 72 hours.
Right.
But it's not going to be a long period of time. It's pretty going to happen soon. So that was the 22nd. Then 23rd, there was all big meetings again. There was a big Zoom call with all the consultants at Adam Brooks, Great Ormond Street, who went through again what the problem was, what the options were. And they were like, you know, we've had 6 or 7 different doctors look at this and they've all got the same opinion, this is where we are, if that makes sense. So that was the 23rd December. 24th of December, Luton Dunstable Hospital were fantastic. They actually provided us with a photographer, who our only club, I think, came up from this part of the world, Nottingham.
Okay.
And they did a, like, they came down to photographs of Matilda and Chester and me. And ironically enough, I dressed up as Santa. For that. So there's actually photos of me with a load of other kids in NICU. Because on Christmas Eve, there was me as Santa. So Christmas was just a bit of a blur, to be honest, because everything happened, you know, we were just living day to day, hour to hour. Christmas Day, we were doing it in shifts, basically. I was going up to the hospital for a few hours and Elaine was going up to the hospital for a few hours because we didn't want to be leaving JJ for hours and hours on end with other people, because it was like we didn't want him asking questions. We didn't want to. We made the decision very early on that Thursday that we wouldn't take JJ into the hospital.
Okay.
Because my father died at Christmas. My father died on the 26th or 27th of December.
Wow.
And I hated Christmas because of that.
Yeah,
until I had kids, it was like, I hated Christmas for me. I used to just get smashed on Christmas Eve and would stay drunk through to like New Year's Eve because I hated the time, if that makes sense. So we made the decision very earlier not to take him in because we're like, look, he's going to start formulating memories now and we don't want memory of Christmas for him to be beeping machines, loads of doctors.
Okay,
So we made that decision. So we didn't take him in. So we went through Christmas Day, Boxing Day. Yeah, every time the phone rang, I was like, is this it? Is that, you know, we had a couple of near scares where the nurses said to us, we think he's going. You need to, one of you, you know, you both need to be here. We went through the week between Christmas and New Year, which is always a weird week, if that makes sense. It's always a funny week. We got to New Year's Eve and I basically, on the Wednesday, the 29th, I'd said, look, I want another opinion because you'd told us this time last week that there was no chance. I want another opinion now. So they re-scanned him and they said, no change. There's nothing there. He wasn't putting weight on. He wasn't improving in any way. He was effectively being kept alive by the CPAC and all that kind of stuff. And I just said, well, let's withdraw everything now and just see kind of where we go, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Just give him what he needs to be kept comfortable. So on New Year's Eve then, I then made the decision. I remember I woke up, I got a phone call from the hospital at 4 o'clock in the morning and they said that we think he's going to go. We think he's really, really deteriorated. You need to come back up. I think Elaine was up there overnight. Or did she ring me? I ended up going up in that morning. I dropped JJ, I think, at Elaine's mum. And I sort of said, got to the hospital. Now, I know we've made him comfortable. He's calmed down now. He's kind of, we don't think he is going to go, if that makes sense.
Right.
So I then said to Elaine, look, fuck it. We're bringing JJ up today. I don't care. There's no point now. Christmas is gone. Christmas is over. Let's bring JJ up. Let JJ meet him. So I went off and spoke to the sister of the NICU and basically said, look, I want to bring my other son in to meet him. I know there's COVID restrictions. You've let my mum come in and see Chester. You've let Elaine's mum come in and see Chester. I want to bring JJ in. I want to bring him in. I want him to meet him. We arranged it. My mum brought him up lunchtime. My mum and Elaine's mum came in for an hour and I took JJ off to Tesco. It was a big Tesco by Luton Dunstable Hospital. Came back and said, look, we're having the five of us in a room now. We had the five of us. There was me, and that's the photo that you were looking at earlier.
That is then.
Oh right, okay.
So we had the five of us in the room for about 2.5-3 hours. About 3:45, Elaine said, "Look, I think JJ's getting tired. He should go home." So we called my mum. "Can you come and pick him up?" Took him out. He went home, and as I went out, I went to the shop in the hospital and bought some sandwiches for me and Elaine, took them back in.
Did you get a Dr. Pepper with sugar this time?
Yeah, I did. Made sure. I think by that time, I think I'd probably gone on to Red Bull. so really tired. And there was a little room where you could eat your food, if that makes sense. And we went into this little room. Well, I went into this little room. Elaine was in with, because at that point, they'd actually moved they'd moved Matilda. So Matilda had actually gone to the next phase of NICU.
Okay.
I don't know what they call it, but Chester was still in the heart.
So for Matilda, she was ever since the birth, she was gaining weight and everything was fine moving on.
Yeah, everything. Okay. So we basically, I was sitting down to have food and it was really random. There was a guy there whose name was Matt Day, and he has something to do with the child. His friend had lost something.
Okay.
And one of his children was in there, and his children, I can't remember what had happened, but his son had swallowed his own faeces or something through pregnancy. And we were talking, and I remember I was sitting there talking to this guy, and I was like, you know, just about to eat the sandwich, and the nurse come running and said, you need to come now. They'd gone and got Elaine. We walked in there, and Chester was, you could see physically he was struggling. He was not in pain, but you could see him struggling. So they started putting all the things on him, putting like the mouth, you know, to try and give him. And I was like, just stop, just please stop everything. So I picked him up, and I remember he still had the, he had the mark.
Yeah.
The monitoring thing on him.
So the little suckers.
They're not called them, are they?
Yeah. But yeah.
So I picked him up. He still had the CPAC on. I took the CPAC off and I put that, and I held him there. And I remember I had Elaine kind of there, and I held him, and he took his last breath. And that was all of, 25, 30 minutes after meeting JJ. So he was waiting to meet his brother. That was it.
Wow.
You actually say that in your bio, don't you?
Yeah.
On New Year's Eve 2021, Chester met his big brother JJ for the first time and soon after took his last breath.
We've got a photo, and one of the photos has been used on, it's on the website, but JJ has got a little Arsenal bear called the Gunnosaurus.
The Gunnosaurus.
And there's a photo of JJ holding it next to Chester's little NICU box, and he's looking through it, if that makes sense. And you've got Chester there with JJ in the background with his Gunnosaurus. We've got it on the wall at home.
Yeah.
So that was the journey of Chester.
Does JJ, what's his recollections of that day? Because of where the age he's at. And do you guys talk about it much?
Yeah, he talks about Chester a lot. He doesn't remember much of being in the hospital. Yeah. I think his recollections and kind of memories of it are more from photographs that we've got than actually being there. But he does talk, he knows he's got a brother that is no longer with us. We had a bit of a problem when he started, because he was in nursery when this all happened, and then he went to preschool. When he was in preschool, there was a kid in his class. They did, you know, as you do, your kids go to school, they do they talk in the class about family. And he said he had a brother, and we're quite well known in the village because, like, Elaine runs her own cake business. I sit on the board of governors for the school. We've got quite, there's a group of friends in the village, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And this one kid was like, "No, you haven't got a brother." And JJ was like, "Yes, I have."
At that age?
Yeah. He's like, "You haven't got a brother. I know you haven't got a brother."
But you want to go around and smack his dad?
Yeah, well, he was like, "I know, you've got a little sister, but you haven't got a brother." And
I suppose that's his understanding.
That's the fine line, isn't it?
Kids at that age, it's black and white.
Yeah, it's 100%. It's that age.
But it still hurt.
But then we had an incident in the East Holidays. Etta was talking to my best mate's little boy, and they were talking about Callie, and Etta's my older one, literally turned round to James and just went, "Yeah, I've got her sister, but she's dead."
Yeah. Well,
it's right down the middle, isn't it? There's nothing, you know, he wouldn't have done it out of spite at that age, right? It's just like,
it is very black or white. And so we went in and spoke to the teachers. And now every year when JJ goes up a year, we go in and say to the teachers, look, if he talks about Chester, if he says about Chester, if he says this, then he has got a brother.
Yeah.
He will often ask questions, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, especially around Christmas time, there's a lot of questions. Last Christmas, there was a lot because he kind of, I think he's got more of that understanding now because he's 7 coming 8. And also Elaine's.
And that's about the age where a child's understanding of sort of finality of death and what death is. It's around about that age where they tend to go into the clear understanding that when somebody has died, they're not coming back.
Yeah. I also think there's a fact of Christmas 2025. So New Year's Day 25, Elaine's dad died. Obviously, he never knew my dad because my dad passed away in 2008.
Okay.
So his granddad passed away. So he's then started having questions about death because of that. So last Christmas, there was a lot of questions. And we go out bike riding, we go out walking most evenings, and he'll often ask, you know, he'll look for the moon, he'll ask questions, why did Chester die? What was the... I've had a couple of like really hard questions from him. One of the hardest questions was he did ask me, you know, why couldn't you fix him? Because if he breaks a toy,
of course.
I fix it. He breaks his bike, I fix it. So that was kind of like the hardest question, but he does ask a lot of questions about it. Matilda's aware that she has a brother.
How's Matilda doing?
We might want to do another episode on Matilda.
I am thinking that, actually.
Because just to give you kind of a brief on that, Matilda, it transpires that Matilda has also got a heart condition.
Oh, wow.
She's got a bicuspid valve.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, like the heart looks like a Mercedes badge. She's only got two prongs.
Okay.
So Matilda died twice herself after Chester died. She contracted neck.
Yeah.
Which is an inflammation of the bowel, which is quite common.
That is serious as well.
Yeah. Well,
it is at the time if it's not treated. Yeah.
Right. So that's probably, if you want to do it, a happy album.
100% we need to do another one.
Because then we have the whole, and I think we spoke about this. So just to cover on Chester, we had his funeral was a bit of a nightmare. We decided we didn't want a big funeral.
Yeah.
I didn't want a funeral. And if you listen to any of the episodes, I just didn't want a funeral.
Yeah.
I'd already said goodbye to him when they told me he wasn't going to live. Then I'd say goodbye to him again the day he died. I remember the night I walked away from the hospital, I had to get somebody to take him out of the room. I couldn't walk out of that room. And I remember saying to the nurse, can you take him? And she said, why? I said, because if you take him, I'm not leaving him.
Yeah.
And although it sounds very nuanced, mentally, I wasn't leaving him.
Makes sense.
So I didn't want a funeral, but we had the funeral. We arranged the funeral. We decided that we would only have the people that met him at the funeral. So it was me, Elaine, my mum, Elaine's mum. We had Colin's dad, but he wasn't very... Elaine's dad, Colin, but he wasn't very well because he had Parkinson's and he'd not been well for about 10 years.
Okay.
That was all we had at the funeral. We had my brother there to support my mum, but we got to the funeral and he was being buried. And my biggest regret out of the whole of this, other than was him passing, and I don't really live on regrets, is I buried him with my dad. And I wish I hadn't of. I really wish I hadn't have buried, but I can't change it now.
Why?
Because when I go up and see my dad for Father's Day, I see my son.
Right.
When I go up and see my son for his birthday, I see my dad. And for me, and I've really struggled mentally with this, is there's a generation missing in the middle there, and that's me. And every time I drive away from that grave, they're buried up in Luton, the back end of Luton. Every time I drive away from that grave, it's like mental torture for myself because I'm like, I would give anything in the world to swap places with and have him. And
I see where you're coming from. Yeah.
At the time, it seemed like the right thing to do, but wrong decision. But on the day of the funeral, it was a very quick funeral. It looked 15-minute service, but because they block out services for certain amounts of time, we had 45 minutes. So after 15 minutes, we walked back out and we stood outside, well, what do we do now?
Yeah.
So we went up to the graveside to be told that the grave diggers weren't ready for us to do what they needed to do. So we were given the option of you either sit in the car with him or he sits in the car and you leave him in the car until they're ready, or you put him in the ground yourself. And I was like...
Whoa, wow. Whoa.
Yeah. I was like, okay. I looked at Elaine and Elaine was just... gone. And I said, I can't have her sitting. With the children's funeral, we got one hearse. We had a limousine. And the Chester was in the middle here. And we didn't have any of our cars with us because we'd gone in if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
So we were like, well, there's, and I don't know if anyone knows Luton Graveyard here, but there's nothing around it. It's right on the edge of the town. So it's not even like you could go, okay, well, I'll go for a walk over to McDonald's there. There is nothing.
Okay.
I looked at Elaine and I said, well, I can't leave her sitting in the car. You know, this is the middle of January, it's cold weather. She's still recovering from surgery. I can't leave her sitting in the car. So I put him in the ground myself. I said, I'll do it myself. So I carried him from the car, lifted him in.
I've never heard of something like that happen before.
Yeah. They dug the hole, but because it wasn't a full funeral, there was no pallbearers. The people at the crematorium that would have been, sorry, not the crematorium, the cemetery would have been putting them in. So I had to stand there. And I mean, things have happened since in like my family and Elaine's family, but not only just for me putting them in there, I can't imagine what that did to like my mum and Elaine's mum. And it's certainly Elaine as well, watching me put him into the ground. I don't really have much recollection of it. I remember, and I can laugh at it now, I remember standing on the side thinking, fuck off, I don't fall in.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I was toying with the idea if to ask about that or not, because it is almost dark humour in a way, isn't it, with that?
That's the thing that sits in my brain. But yeah, you just have to do it. But the thing about the funeral as well is at that time, that was after Matilda had her issues and died twice. So Matilda was in Addenbrookes at the time because she'd been transferred to Addenbrookes for the special care. And I was so, for that funeral, I just wanted to get it over and done with. Sure. Not because I wanted the funeral over and done with, but I don't know. One thing I think would have absolutely done me in, and I don't think I'd have got through, would have been if we'd have took a phone call at that funeral to say Matilda's gone.
Yeah.
Getting through that funeral was horrendous. And just on a lighter note before we finish up on that part of the story, but I have to give props to, I mean, I know they're closing most of their restaurants now, but the Beef Eater, we decided we were going to have a meal afterwards. And there's a restaurant in Luton, it's no longer there, it's called the Warden Tavern. And as a kid, my dad, every Tuesday and Thursday night, would find a reason to go there. your mum's burnt dinner, your nan's done any reason, he'd find a reason to go there. Right, and because obviously my dad had never met any of the kids, because he was, I sort of said, look, let's go there for dinner. Let's have a lunch there afterwards. We'll just have a quick lunch.
Yeah.
So I booked a table discreetly in the corner. I sent a message to the owner of the restaurant and said, look, I'm not looking for anything special, but can you just make sure that we're put away somewhere?
This is
almost not a wake, but it's a meal for my son that's passed away. And he came over to me at the end of dinner and he actually said, just to let you know, this is all free. I said, why? He said, I'm given a certain amount of money each year to pay for things for guests that I think deserve it. And he said, this is the most deserving I've ever had.
Wow.
And he said, so, no charge. And it kind of restored after everything that had happened.
A bit of faith.
Oh, that's also the reason why they went bust.
Yeah. I do joke and say if I'd have known they were going to do that, I'd have had the £40 rather than the small one.
Do you know what? I think that's, again, to back up what you said, it's because the one thing which keeps coming through over and over again, very prominent in everything that you spoke about, the amount of stuff, it was just relentless, one thing after another.
Yeah.
And the way that you've just, there's never an easy way I can say this without it sounding patronizing, but the way that you've spoken about this today, and I wouldn't feel it was right to rush you
to
more on it. And I know it was a bit of a journey for you, but if you could join us again for another episode, and you're more than welcome. We'd love you to come back in.
Yeah.
But if not, then you get your beautiful, that is a hell of a beard you've got. And just honestly, I wish mine could grow like that. And we'll get you on that screen there. So that's completely up to you.
No, I'd happily come back up.
Anything you want to mention before we wrap up this episode, or we'll just start off again when you
I think
when you come back.
We've kind of dovetailed quite nicely there, because the funeral is the part where I think what we probably pick up next is what happened with Matilda and then the journey after that, because there is quite a significant journey. And then that will feed into what we were talking at the beginning about. Mm.
Perfect.
With the podcast and stuff. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, listen, Jeff, for now, thank you so much for joining us on the Still Parents podcast, and we wish you nothing but success with the Brothers in Baby Loss podcast, which again, I guess pretty much like this one, is a podcast you wish you didn't really have to even fucking do in the first place, but you're doing it, and it's there to help people who, and every single episode will be the first episode that a listener has heard, whether it's of this, whether it's of your podcast, or any of the resources which are out there. Yeah. So let's get you back on sooner rather than later, and you've been absolutely absolutely fascinating. All the details where you can find Jeff, details about what he's talked about on this episode and links for the Brothers in Baby Loss podcast can be found here. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And Jeff, we will be back with our next episode very, very soon. Matthew, see you in a bit.
See you later, mate.
In a bit, Ryan.
Bye-bye.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.